NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus chews.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43-9267-V1.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Hello and welcome. It's time for another edition of Coffee Talk on the Pictureless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am back. I left Nate alone for a week, not intentionally. But I did leave Nate alone. Of course, Nate being Nate the Great Kosher, my wonderful co-host on this podcast. Nate, how you doing?
Doing well. I'm glad you're back. It is easier with two people to have a conversation.
Yes, it is. It is, because there's a second half to the conversation. It's not just you talking to yourself.
Right. So, I think I did good enough, but glad to have you back, Trevor.
Yes, I am happy to be back once again. My apologies. I started school and a new job all in the last week or two, and I was kind of overwhelmed and needed a minute, and Nate was gracious enough to give me one. So I am back, and we're ready to go, Nate, and that means we are ready to talk about some baseball. The first thing I want to bring up, it's a Detroit Tigers thing, per usual. It's not the Detroit Tigers thing you're probably thinking. Tarek Skubal hit 102 miles per hour in a Major League Baseball game. Wow. As if he wasn't unfair enough. Yeah, it was on Pitching Ninja if you haven't seen it. I can probably go find it and send it to you. But I mean, as if Tarek Skubal wasn't already insane enough, now he's hitting triple digits. Not even just triple digits, 102 in a game. That is absolutely insane, Nate.
That is insane. I had not seen that. I'll have to look that up. I know he's been, I mean, unbelievable this season. What do you think the difference has been? Is he just healthy now? I know he battled some injuries.
Yeah, I mean, there's been some health stuff. He's always kind of had, obviously, immense talent. He was part of this big three prospects, pitching prospects for Detroit, and it was Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Tarek Skubal, and look at the one who's risen to the top. It wasn't the first rounder. Remember, Tarek Skubal was, I want to say, a 10th rounder or something like that. I mean, he was not a high pick, and Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of him getting healthy, I think, and finally figuring some things out. And it's been so awesome. And obviously, I'm not expecting 102 every game, but for him to have the kind of arsenal he does and to be able to use it the way he does and also throw 102 miles an hour, that is absolutely crazy. And it makes me so happy to see, just because, you know, again, it's that underdog type of story with Scooble. He was not the big name guy out of the big three pitchers that the Tigers had at that one point. He was a ninth round pick out of Seattle. And it was so amazing.
I'm just looking at his season stats now after I think we maybe briefly talked about him earlier, but now he's up to 8-1, 1.92 ERA, 0.89 whip. And you have to think he's going to be among the AL Cy Young candidates.
Oh, he's, I mean, I think he keeps his pace up. Absolutely.
I mean, he'll be an all-star. He might even have a chance to start the all-star game.
He absolutely could. Do you want to know one other fun fact about Tarik Skubal?
Let's hear
it. He was on the very first ever PitchCon.
Oh, was he really?
He was. Me and Andy Patton, who worked at Pitcherless back then, we did a panel, and it was he and I just talking to pitchers. We had Daniel Lynch, Tarik Skubal, and Alex Fajedo all on the panel. It was so cool. Oh, it was so cool. Much fun. So just another fun fact about Tarik Skubal. I'm not saying that's why he's so good now, but I can't say it isn't. You know what I mean? No, I'm totally kidding.
A friend of Pitcherless, though. You could say that.
You could say that, yeah. Super awesome, and super awesome to see him going well. And before we move off of the Tigers, Nate, go ahead. I know there's a question you want to ask me.
Yes. I'm sorry. I have to ask it. But last week, talked quite a bit about Spencer Torkelson, and I said on there, I will talk about it, but I need to get Trevor's thoughts and opinions. So Torkelson demoted, number one pick, 2020 draft that we've talked about a lot. I know he'd been struggling. I was still surprised. That was my take. What are your thoughts?
So not only did he get demoted, this is the second year in a row that he has gotten demoted after starting the year in the majors. Last year he came back on a tear, and that made everybody think, okay, maybe it's going to be like that again this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's gotten demoted, and as far as I can tell, I haven't looked up his numbers, but just highlights on Twitter, it seems like he's been mashing at the AAA level. I don't know if I'm going to react to this the way you think I'm going to. If that's what he needs, then that's fine. I think, and I truly believe this, Spencer Torkelson was rushed to the majors by a front office that was on its last legs. So when Torkelson first got called up, it wasn't the Scott Harris era like it is right now in Detroit. It was still Al Avila and company. And after having what seemed like endless rope to get this rebuild done, they were finally at the end of it. And it felt like they just kind of pushed Spencer Torkelson straight through. I mean, he jumped a ton of levels at once, and he was just on an opening day roster. And
yeah,
if you really paid attention to how he did at those levels that year, he went on absolute tears. Don't get me wrong. He had moments where he looked like he was, as he should be, the best player on the field. But it seemed like he always had these streaks of being mm-hmm. super cold before he got super hot. And it never seemed to me like he was at that point where he had figured it out and you're like, all right, he's major league ready. When he got called up, I didn't think he was major league ready. And that's just one man's opinion, obviously.
Sure.
But I feel like he was rushed. And so if he needs that extra time, then I don't see anything wrong with that. I know that it seems weird because he was a former first overall pick and he's been up twice now and been down twice now, 2 years in a row. But the thing is, development is not a straight line. I will live and die by that. Mm-hmm. The players need what they need. Here's my main concern. Being a first overall pick and going through this path that Spencer Torkelson has had to go through, I'm worried that it's a mental thing. I'm worried there's a strong mental component, all of the expectation and the weight of the pressure of it all. I don't know if that's hurting his performance or not. And now he goes down to AAA. There's no expectation, and he starts mashing, right? It would make sense. And what that turns into for me is, does Spencer Torkelson in a few years find his way to a new team? There go the expectations, and we finally start to see what Spencer Torkelson is. And I want him to be that in Detroit for the Tigers, obviously, as a Tigers fan. But it's a scary thought, because he is a very talented baseball player. I mean, there's no getting around that. He was a first overall pick for a reason. That talent is still there. I mean, I talked to scouts who said that they saw him and Adley Rutschman on the same field in college, and Torkelson was the guy. You know, it doesn't mean Adley Rutschman. I mean, that doesn't mean Adley Rutschman wasn't a guy, but if you're talking about the guy on the field, the best player on the field, I had a scout who was very, very sure that Torkelson was the guy in that situation. Again, that was back in college. Lots of things have changed, but I am hopeful that Torkelson can, I don't know, catch fire and keep it going and keep that going through when he gets called back up, because he's not going to be down all year. He'll be back up at some point this year.
Definitely.
But it's just kind of scary to think what that means for his future with the Tigers, and if he'll be able to pull himself out of this hole and be a consistent contributor.
Well, I thought perhaps you'd be more angry or frustrated, but that's a pretty patient response to it. And it makes sense that you thought he was rushed in the first place. So,
yeah, if Riley Green ever gets sent down, that's when I might start yelling and screaming. But Spencer Torkelson, I totally get. It sucks. I wish it didn't have to happen. But at a certain point, if he's not hitting, it's only going to hurt him. So you want to get him down somewhere where he can see some success. And even, you know, you can get some of your AAA coaches or the roving instructors and send them to Toledo and help figure out what's wrong. I know one of the good friends of mine, I wrote for the site for a long time, Bless You Boys, they always talk about how he is late to fastballs, and he just can't get the timing down on certain fastballs. And so maybe they need to tweak an approach. Maybe they need to, there's something in there that is holding him back. And whether that be the mental side, an approach, a little hitch in the mechanics, whatever it is, there's still time for it to be worked out. And rather than allow him to fail at the major league level, I see no issue in having him try to work it out at the AAA level. And hopefully the next time he comes up, that's the time, because he's not going to get that many more chances. I mean, this is his second option. So he's got one more option next year, and then, you know, he's going to have to be on the major league roster. So I think it's a matter of figuring out what that is. And that can be a really hard thing to do, but I really hope he works it out, because I've been dreaming of a successful Detroit Tigers lineup that has Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson and most recently Colt Keith, who there's a whole nother topic of conversation, but you know, I'm really hopeful that Torkelson can turn it around. Speaking of another guy, Nate, that got sent down to AAA, maybe unexpectedly, maybe expectedly, Reed Detmers, pitcher for the Angels. He was recently sent down, and in his first start at the AAA level, it was, I'm going to use the word interesting, because I don't want to say it was bad, because there were some good parts, but I don't want to say it was good, because there were some really bad parts. So, Nate, I know we just talked about this, but his performance in that first game, he went 5 innings, gave up 10 hits, 7 earned runs, 4 home runs, but he did strike out 8. And if that is not a 2024 Reed Detmers line, then I don't really know what is.
And one other weird characteristic to throw in there, no walks. I saw.
Yeah. So, filling up the zone, but it's going far.
Yeah. So obviously the home run ball hurt him. And I saw this tweet here. It says he threw more sliders than fastballs. Clearly he wanted to work on his slider. Angels care about him working out stuff rather than results. So he's trying to tweak through some things rather than maybe pitch a perfect game. And, you know, but still not great.
Still not great. And you know what? That's a good point, because that happens a lot when you're watching minor league baseball. If you want to talk about Tarek Skubal's appearance on PitchCon, he actually talked about that. He said there was a game when his job was to work on his changeup. And if I'm recalling the story correctly, he threw a changeup, gave up a home run, but like, you can't let that phase you. You got to keep throwing your changeup because that's your job that day. It's not necessarily results based, but it's based on how you look. And if his job is to work on the changeup, or like Detmer's, if his job is to work on his slider and they want to try to get him an extra breaking ball weapon, that's his job that day.
Yeah, and he's obviously working through it, maybe hanging it a little bit over the plate, or it wasn't getting where it needed to go. But I would say another guy I'm not worried about long-term, though, Reed Detmers. Also pretty talented, same draft.
Same draft. Detmers was, I want to say, the 10th overall pick that year, and he was confirmed the 10th overall pick that year. So nine spots after Torkelson got picked.
There it is. And last year, he was 4-10 with a 4.48 ERA. 2022, he was 7-6 with a 3.77 ERA at the age of 22. So you're thinking last season, oh, this is, you know, he's maybe going to be among the best pitchers on the Angels outside of Ohtani. And as you said, the development is not a straight line, takes a step back. And even this season, he started
out fantastic.
Yeah, great. In his first month or so, I think he was like 3-1.
And remember, Reed Detmers threw a no hitter last year. I mean, I don't think it was a perfect game. Yeah, he threw a no hitter last year.
I didn't remember that, but yeah, so he's good.
This is like, and I hate to do this, his career so far is like mini Alek Manoah. Just in the fact that he has such amazing highs, right? He's got his no hitter. He had his amazingly torrid pace that he was on at the beginning of 2024, and some really just lows. I mean, and to be fair, the PCL is kind of a launching pad. So the home runs are home runs, whatever. But the fact that he's getting hit hard, I think, is what to take away, not necessarily how many home runs he gives up. He's giving up hard contact. And so if he has these kind of high moments, low moments, like, I don't know, it's not like that. And it's probably an unfair assessment to make, but just in terms of thinking of that roller coaster, man, who's another pitcher we've talked about on it.
And I think like Detmers too, I would expect him to be back this season, maybe after the All-Star break. I don't know, but I don't think he's going to be down there all season.
No, that seems like another one. Like, with these guys who get sent down like that, it seems like it's got to be just a tweak or two, something that they see that they're like, we really want you to work on this, but we want you to see success with it. And so we don't want you to be working on it at the major league level right now, since you don't have to. So I would expect both of them to be back. And Nate, speaking of Alek Manoah, I didn't just bring him up for this reason, but it doesn't hurt. We've talked about his season and how weird it is.
We have.
It's over now. Unfortunately, he needs Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, I saw that news pop up over the last week here. And I think as of last week's episode, when we recorded it, just said he had some sort of an elbow injury or tightness or something. Didn't sound, you know, completely to the point where, oh no, it's going to be Tommy John season ending. But that is exactly what happened. So that maybe makes sense with his roller coaster he was on. He had those two games back to back, seven innings, and then maybe after that success, that's when the injury starts to bug him more. What a strange career for him so far.
Yeah, it's been odd, and another strange career that was leading to a halfway decent year that got cut short by injury is Sixto Sanchez in Miami. He missed, if I'm remembering correctly, 2021 through this year, making only one rehab appearance in all of those years. That's what, three seasons. He made one rehab appearance, and all of a sudden he was being talked about as a bullpen guy. maybe in Miami or whatever. And then he's in the rotation. And his last few starts, he was kind of figuring it out and showing why he was a top pitching prospect at one point prior to all the injuries. And now, I mean, hopefully it's not a long-term thing, but his shoulders hurt again. It was shoulder surgeries that kept him out for 3 years. And now his shoulders feeling some pain again, I guess. And so who knows what's going to happen with Sixto Sanchez.
Yeah, that's too bad. He's someone I had at one point on my dynasty team. It must have been, like you said, a number of years ago. But pitchers, I feel like the injuries in prospects, when there are injuries, pitchers are usually the most affected because it's their arm, and if they can't pitch, that's it. You know, a prospect, a hitting prospect can do a lot of different things, and maybe they're having other types of injuries. But young talent, sadly, may not ever reach his full potential. But yeah, he wasn't doing too bad. He was in relief for the Marlins until about the last month. Here I checked his stats, and he wasn't going particularly long into game, so they're probably trying to stretch him out, keep it cautious. Can't say that word right now. Safe. but yeah, that's too bad. Maybe it will not be the season though. He's still only 25 years old.
I hope not, man. Cause those pitchers who just go through endless arm injuries, but are supposed to have all the arm talent in the world. I mean, makes me so sad. I mean, not just because it happened to the Tigers recently, Franklin Perez, who was one of the main parts of the Justin Verlander trade. He was one of those pitchers who just couldn't get his arm healthy. Mm-hmm. Anderson Espinoza, who was with the Padres, and then subsequently, I think he debuted for the Cubs at one point and pitched in the majors for the Cubs at one point. He was another guy who had this high ceiling and a lot of prospect hype, I guess. I can't think of the other word. And he wound up having a bunch of injuries. And, you know, and Sixto Sanchez is kind of on that same path. And a lot of those, I mean, Edward Cabrera's had a number of injuries. Obviously, yes. Max Meyer is coming off of his injury that kept him out last year. And maybe Max Meyer's the one who comes up and takes the innings from Sixto Sanchez. We'll see. He's still not. I mean, his ERA is still over six, well over six. It's 6.75 in AAA right now. So I don't know. I guess we'll see. What's going to happen there? And again, hopefully Sixto Sanchez is not hurt for the year, because if he can, you know, recapture some of that prospect magic, we're getting another really good pitcher in the game of baseball, and that'd be awesome.
When you were talking about some of those other guys, another one, he's a little bit older, but Luis Severino, now with mm-hmm. the Mets, he had a couple of great seasons for the Yankees, and then like three or four down seasons. Came back last year with the Yankees, didn't look great, but this season he's been okay. And
mm-hmm. not super fantasy
no
useful, but he's been a good pitcher.
He's at least looked like a serviceable member of a rotation.
Mm-hmm. Which absolutely is good. Absolutely. You know what else is good, Nate? Our wonderful sponsors. We're going to take a minute to hear from them. We will be back with more of Coffee Talk on the Pitcher List Podcast Network.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to eight. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP439267V1.
Kirk. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I am joined by Nate Kosher. We've had some great conversation already. Let's just keep the arm talk rolling for a minute. I guess injured arm talk rolling for a minute, Nate. Because that's what we were talking about before. We're talking about these pitchers who have had a lot of injuries and never quite lived up to the hype that they thought they were going to have. Well, you know who is living up to the hype and just casually went from an injured reliever to like one of the best starters in the whole league? Garrett Crochet. We talked about him in the very first episode of Coffee Talk 12 episodes ago. And now he is on. He's amazing.
Yeah, he's been great. And another thing we've talked about a few times is how bad the White Sox have been, and they have really also carried through on our predictions that they would be bad. Ugly season, but Crochet's been great as a starter, and overpowering stuff with his fastball. And I saw that he's been named in some trade rumors because of the White Sox lack of success. And the Athletic, Ken Rosenthal reported the Padres have strong interest in Crochet because they have some starters hurt out there, but it'll be interesting to see what happens because still obviously young, new in his career, you'd think the White Sox would want to hold on to him because he's looked so good, but who knows what they're up to.
Hopefully they do. I can't confidently say that they do. If that's mean, I don't know. Their season has just been rough. That's all I'm saying. And you know, I think that based on where they're at, which if you're curious where they're at the point of recording this, which again we record on Mondays of this week, they're at 17-49, which is a winning percentage of .258. So it's not good. And I think that if I'm looking at that, you're in a rebuild. And if you look at their farm system, where is the rebuild going to end? I don't quite see that. So if you think that Garrett Crochet, I mean, you have two more years of arbitration after this, I think I'm looking to move him because if you wait another year, something else could happen. He could get hurt. He could drop off in his performance, which could hurt his value.
His value is high right now.
So if you're looking, if you're about to jump into another rebuild, which it seems like the White Sox probably should, I know they traded and it got a bunch of prospects, but if you're trading Garrett Crochet right now, or if he keeps his performance up at the trade deadline next month, then I think you're going to get that high level prospect that you can pair up with Colson Montgomery and say, this is our future right here. Because no. I think they have some good prospects, but I don't know that if they necessarily have the ones where you're like, you know what? Boom. I mean, I like Noah Schultz, but you know, I think you can get a guy close to the majors who has a high prospect pedigree if you try to trade him with his 2 years before he reaches free agency.
Well, let me throw another point here into our discussion. I don't know if you saw this, but Drew Thorpe is getting the call by the White Sox. And that's actually someone I talked about last week. We had a question someone asked me on Twitter. It was posed to us, what pitcher out of the top 50 prospects could you see making an impact this season, still making an impact? And I guess I did not know he was getting called up, but that makes me look smart because he is getting the call. I was just looking at how that people were doing this season. And so it's interesting. Crochet with success, and now Thorpe is going to make his debut tomorrow. And funny enough, he was acquired from the Padres. We were just talking about the Padres and the Dylan Cease trade. But he's looked really good. 56 strikeouts in 11 starts in 60 innings. Only a double A. And that's actually what I talked about last week, is he wasn't yet to triple A. So I said, well, he's probably going to move to triple A soon, get some triple A starts, but they're bumping him right up to the majors.
Yeah. And you know what, if you're the White Sox, the Padres aren't a bad route to go. Think of who they've traded recently. James Wood was a former Padre. Mackenzie Gore, obviously, they dealt Drew Thorpe after getting Drew Thorpe from the Yankees. They are not afraid to trade their prospects if they're getting something that they believe in. CJ Abrams was traded. Obviously, that was for Juan Soto, but still, I mean, they are not afraid to deal their prospects if they believe in the person that they are trading for. So if they all, if you do decide to trade Garrett Crochet, the Padres aren't a bad suitor for him, but you're probably looking and saying, hey, we need one of your top three prospects, and that's where things might fall apart. Because obviously with all the prospect trading they've been doing, the once great Padres farm system is a little not so great anymore. But, you know, Ethan Salas, Robbie Snelling, Dylan Lesko, they're at the top of it right now. They probably don't trade Leo DeVries, the top end international free agent they just signed. Leo Dallas DeVries, I should call him. Adam Mazur also is a prospect that has recently debuted in the majors. So,
oh yes,
there are some options there. But that's beside the point. Drew Thorpe is getting ready to make his debut, and you know he could have an impact. I have mixed feelings about him. I think he's more of a four in a five-man rotation than anything else. You're talking about a guy with low 90s velo every time I've encountered him, maybe touching, you know, the mid-90s somewhere in there. I like his changeup a lot. He's got decent command. I mean, everything just kind of stacks up to him being like that four in a rotation if I were to project it out and really put grades to it. So, I think that it's worth a speculative add if you have the room on your team, but I just am not sure if he's a guy that's going to stick around on your team for long term, other than to stream him against good matchups. Just my take on what he has. It's also entirely possible he comes and is amazing, but it's hard for me to see that happening. Just because of the fact that, you know, if you're throwing low 90s, you need to have some really good off speed. And he does have an above average, maybe even plus changeup. He does have average, maybe slightly above average breaking pitch. I believe it's a slider, top of my head. I don't know. I think a lot's going to have to go right for him. And it's going to be very much based on how his command is that day.
Yes. And that's something also kind of part of his arsenal. He doesn't walk a ton of people. He's supposed to have pretty good command. So we'll see how that plays once he's in the bigs, but it's at least interesting from a fantasy perspective, because when we got the question, you know, I was looking through the list, and there's not that many more that we could expect this season to have an impact.
Well, and you know, with the Padres dealing with the injuries they're dealing with, I mean, in the span of one day, they lost Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish to injury, yeah. Although I believe Darvish is going to be back, expected to be back by the end of next week. At least that's what our internal projections had at pitcher list. But that opened up some spots. Obviously, we're seeing Drew Thorpe up. Adam Mazur got a chance. Randy Vasquez has been up. I think Johnny Brito's been working out of the bullpen, but he's another guy they just traded for. So yes. There's chances for young pitchers there. And obviously, the fact that they're struggling with pitching is why they're in on Garrett Crochet and probably some other pitching at the trade deadline. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. And speaking of Randy Vasquez, I loved Randy Vasquez as a prospect. I know he's not really doing much this year, but man, it was his power curveball that was nuts. I don't know if I was just seeing the right angles on it, but it was a nuts breaking ball, and I absolutely adored it.
He's
still could be. I think he's yeah. young and he's still figuring some stuff out. But the other thing with him again is A, what's your second or what's your third pitch, and B, you know, he's not lighting up the radar gun either. So he needs that. He doesn't quite have the command that Thorpe has. So he really needs that breaking ball to be working and missing bats, and kind of hasn't been at the major league level, but that could be usage. So I don't know, but you know, it's just kind of fun in San Diego right now. If you're a prospect head and you hate that it's fun because of injuries, but they have some young arms and they're giving them shots because they have the space at this point.
Yeah. And obviously the Padres have World Series aspirations, and with their hitters and lineup and the talent they have. So they're going to be willing to make whatever moves that they need to make, maybe push people a little quicker to try to fill those spots. I was just going to go look up
the Padres are the perpetual man. Look at that team. And then,
yeah, they haven't quite put it together. I was just going to go look up the NL West standings.
They've had some absolutely, while you're doing that, they've had some absolutely fun teams over the past few years, and they've made that push. They've made those trades they need to make to try to improve and take that final leap. And man, it has just been tough for them to make that final leap. And
yeah, it has. Here it is. They're one game under 500. Second, Dodgers are 8 games up, and then Giants and Diamondbacks are close, and the Rockies are 17 games back. But I think the Padres, like, they've been a wild card team maybe one season. They had to win the wild card to get in another season or something like that. They haven't had the success you would have guessed with the moves they've made. And then Juan Soto comes and goes. You don't like to see that in the year he's having in New York as a Padres fan, but they're basically chasing. They're going to always be chasing the Dodgers.
And that's what I was going to say. They're in a division with the Dodgers. Exactly. Yeah. It like what they have to get in on a wild card because the Dodgers right now are going to take the West unless something goes horribly wrong for them. I mean, everybody says, oh, the Dodgers pitching depth, but I mean, right now, it's Tyler Glasnow, it's Yamamoto, it's Bobby Miller who just came back, it's Gavin Stone, they have dudes now.
And yeah, Kershaw is lingering around. I don't know. He's supposed to be coming back at some point. He re-signed with them.
Yeah, so it's crazy that their pitching is maybe catching up to their hitting a little bit, and their hitting is of course absolutely insane. So tough road if you're in the NL West. I think the Rockies might have just given up.
Yes, indeed. the Rockies not having a great year either. But they had They have some prospects we've talked about that maybe they'll get the chance.
They just called up Adeel Amador.
Oh, they did?
The other day. Yeah, their shortstop, one of their top prospects. Absolutely, they did. Switch hitter, I believe, switch hitting shortstop. And recently, like within the last few days, he got called up. And I'm not sure how he's done, but I know he wasn't lighting the world on fire in AAA or anything, but they, you know, they called him up and hey.
Oh, yeah, there is. He debuted yesterday, Sunday. He will wear number one. He is the number one prospect. That's kind of cool. Let's see. I'm trying to see the results of the game.
Yeah, he's a hit over power switch hitter. You know, should play pretty well in Coors if he gets a solid chance at it. So the pitching with the Rockies is just what throws me. I mean, I do the expected. Yeah. I mean, I've said this a bunch of times. We all know this by now, right? I do the expected starting pitching article for Pitcher List every week. And so I'm looking at pitching stats every week. And it's like at the top, it's the Phillies and then a little bit of space, then everybody else, and then a lot of space, and then the Rockies. Like there's no other way to put it. Like they just, and it's not just, there's even categories that they should be able to compete in. I know their home field is Coors, right? So they're going to have an inflated ERA, inflated batted ball numbers, all that fun stuff. But like they're trailing by a bunch in strikeouts, right? Coors doesn't affect strikeouts.
No. Yeah. That's what's funny.
At least they were. I mean, things have changed. I didn't look that deep into it this week, but it seems like they're just so far behind in so many categories pitching wise.
And for you fantasy people out there, maybe looking for a second baseman, that's where he played yesterday. He went 1-for-3 and had a stolen base. So not a terrible debut.
Pretty good. I mean, that's what you're hoping. He's an above average runner. A good hit tool, so he's probably going to hit and steal. That's kind of your hope for him fantasy wise.
Exactly. That's, yeah, if he can keep doing that going forward, he's someone that's interesting. But yeah, those Rockies pitchers, it seems like fantasy wise, if you think back, I remember like Kyle Freeland, I think he had like a good kind of outlier year. Every once in a while you'll get these random years, but I can't even think of an ace pitcher that the Rockies have ever had. I'm going to, once again, this is Nate doing a lot of research.
I mean, like people were excited that John Gray got out of Colorado. Yes. He's with Texas now. They had their dude was their closer. Was it Daniel Bard for a little bit?
It was.
That was their big name closer.
Oh, it's, man. Just, okay, Trevor, here's some fantasy, and not fantasy, it's a guessing game. That's what I meant to say. I know you like to always do guessing games with me. Okay, so here, all-time leader in wins for the Rockies, who do you think it is? Pitching wins, career.
Okay, so can I ask you this? Because in all fairness, I was born in 1995.
Okay.
So is this somebody who I would know?
It's someone, I'll say this, it's someone who's playing in the time period you should know. Like, you'd be familiar with when this person played.
Are they so they're not active anymore?
They're not active. I'll give you this. They retired in 2018.
Did they play for any other teams?
They did. They played for the Royals and Brewers.
Royals, Brewers, and he had oh my gosh, it's not Ubaldo Jimenez, but it's that era.
Nope. Yeah, and he's number six on the list.
Oh my gosh, I know this. I was writing for a Milwaukee Brewers fan blog when this dude pitched for him, and I can't think of his name now, but I know exactly who it is. Julie Chassin.
Nope.
Dang it. Who was
You're
it?
Close. He's on the list too. So that's pretty good. You named two of the top 10. Jorge De La Rosa.
Nope. Dang.
Have you ever heard that name?
I honestly don't think so.
I So this is, I only know this. I would have never guessed that in a million years. I was thinking, you know who I was thinking is, what's his name?
Herman Marquez?
Yes, thank you. That's who I would have guessed.
You know, it's so funny because when we were talking about who are the good pitchers for the Rockies that turned into aces, I was looking to see if Marquez was pitching anywhere else. I literally Googled him to see what was up with him.
So De La Rosa, I remember from the Brewers, he was only there for three seasons, but I remember one of my friends had nicknamed him Jorge De La Scora because he gave up so many runs. And that's the only thing I ever remember. I didn't even remember he went to the Rockies or had a serviceable career, but he just kind of hung around. Mm-hmm. Four double-digit win seasons, but it's really sad. I mean, they don't even have someone that's won 100 career games.
But it's so hard to pitch there, obviously. And yeah. I know that affects both teams when you're there, but they have to draft those pitchers. Otherwise, nobody's going to voluntarily decide they're going to sign with Colorado. I mean, somebody might, but for the most part, no pitcher who is in the prime of their career is going to be like, Coors,
right,
my home.
No, not at all. And I think Jimenez is the career leader in WAR and ERA.
Do you remember that insane stretch that Yuvaldo Jimenez had where he was like the best pitcher in baseball and it wasn't close?
Yeah. Yes, I do. He was looking. Yeah. It's like, oh, this guy's going to be a superstar.
Yeah.
That was a while ago, but
that was I want to say I might have been in like eighth grade. That was a long time ago when that happened. I know it was around the time. I don't think it was the exact same year. It was around the time Zach Britton was still a starter with Baltimore.
2010. So yeah, that's probably tracked with you said you were born in 1995.
That'd be eighth grade about freshman year, somewhere in there. Yeah, absolutely.
So he was 19-8 with a 2.88 ERA. And he pitched 221 innings for the Rockies, was an all-star, and finished third in Cy Young voting. But he, I remember he went to Baltimore after that. And even then, he would have these really good games, like mm-hmm. just kind of out of nowhere and never could put it together. But yeah,
yep.
Jorge De La Rosa, all-time leading Rockies wins.
That's insane. I could you could have given me 100 guesses. I would never pull that out.
And like I said, I only remember because of the funny nickname, and I remembered he was right. on the Brewers, but I didn't even know what happened to him after that.
I would have guessed Larry Walker before him. So right. you know, who knows? All right, Nate, we're gonna take another quick time out here. We come back, we are gonna talk more baseball. You are listening to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup.
For those who embrace the impossible, the Defender 110 is up for the adventure. This iconic vehicle has been redefined with a modern design that lets you go further and do more. The exterior is reimagined with compelling proportions and precise detailing, complemented by an interior built with integrity. The Defender capability is legendary. Whether you're facing off-road challenges or harsh weather conditions, its durability has been tested to the extreme. Powerful innovations like the intuitive driver display and award-winning infotainment system keep you connected. Innovative camera technologies deliver unobstructed views and effortless maneuvering. And robust cargo capacity means more room for your gear. Ready for a wide range of adventures, the Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at NetCredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Have you heard? Sling TV offers the news you love for less.
Hey, wait. You look and sound just like me. I am you. I'm the same news programs on Sling TV for less.
You mean you're me, but for less money.
A lot less. I'm all the favorite news programs and more on Sling TV starting at just $40 a month.
Everything great about me, but for less money?
Which makes me greater, don't you think? Get the news you love and more for less.
Start saving today. Visit sling.com to see your offer. Sling.
Of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth, and I am joined by Nate Kosher. And I got an interesting trivia question before that led to some interesting conversation. Well, another conversation we had a couple of episodes ago, Nate, was about Oliver Drake. Do you remember our talk about him and how he was just DFA'd and sent everywhere?
Yes. Yeah, we talked about in one season, mm-hmm. right? He was up and down in a bunch of different teams. Yes.
It's not as close. It's not even remotely close to Oliver Drake levels, but I just saw a piece of news that Nico Goodrum just got claimed by the Pirates, I believe it was, from the Angels. And the Angels, earlier this year, claimed Nico Goodrum from the Rays, who I think it was in the offseason, traded for Nico Goodrum from probably the Twins. So if you go back to the offseason, Nico Goodrum's having one of those years where he is just going all around. And he's gotten major league playing time this year, not hitting very well, but a funny little anecdote for you there to start this segment that Nico Goodrum is looking like he's going to have an Oliver Drake type of path this year where he's just going to be getting sent around.
Yeah, that is funny. And I remember him from the Tigers days. There was a couple of years he was okay, right? I mean, he wasn't an all-star, but was he on the Twins too? You said the Twins?
I think he was on the Twins earlier this year. I know the Tigers got him from the Twins. He was one of the best hitters on the Tigers teams that were competing for Spencer Torkelson and competing for...
That's a good way to say it.
competing for Casey Mize.
Yeah.
He had a couple good by default years compared to his peers, I think, where, you know, people were really excited about Nico Goodrum, but that's just because of what, you know, he would never jumped off the page, right? You're not like, oh, that's a for sure all-star, but he was one of the better players on those Tigers teams.
Yeah. On a weak roster.
So, it's good to see him still kicking around. I always enjoyed watching him play. Another guy who, we're all going to enjoy watching play Major League Baseball soon is, one of the top prospects in baseball, a former Padre, current National, and that is James Wood, who is, I don't know if you've ever seen a highlight, but James Wood is insane in many ways. Just yes. So many ways.
Future stud. I mean, he's already a stud, but you think this is someone, he's huge. He's a physical specimen. And
6'7".
He's 6'7". Wow.
6'7", 234. He's 21 years old, won't turn 22 until September.
That's crazy. I was going to say, this is someone we've talked about a few people this episode are borderline fantasy pickups or maybe streaming, et cetera. James Wood's probably someone in redraft leagues who people took at the beginning of the year because he's that, you know, he was that good and that high up on the prospect list. Most likely, mm-hmm. he's already on a roster. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yeah. And he probably should be, because he's having a bonkers year in AAA so far. 202 plate appearances. He has 9 home runs and 10 steals. So he might be a double-digit steal guy for you, as well as providing some insane, and I mean insane, power. Obviously, from a 6-7 frame, you hoped he would hit the ball that hard. What's weird, or I guess good, but what's crazy about his stat line now is that he's walking 17.3% and striking out 18.3%.
Oh, that is good. That, which, yeah, is, that was, that's,
I mean,
a good development.
It is, but if you look at his 368 plate appearances in AA last year, he had a 33.7% strikeout rate. So something has changed. You know, and maybe he's sacrificing some of the power because he also had 18 home runs in AA. Who knows? But some of that swing and miss that worried you about James Wood has, it looks like it's at least gone down for the moment. Maybe he's seeing better pitches. Maybe pitchers are just trying to be too careful because they know he's good and they end up making a bad pitch because they're worried about it. I don't know. But that's an insane jump on his swing and miss. I will also point out that he has a 413 BABIP, which doesn't mean anything negative necessarily. It doesn't mean anything positive. I mean, he hits the ball hard, so that would mean his BABIP should be higher than what you would expect. But
yeah,
I don't know, man. He's insane. Like, none of this is to say he's doing bad or you should worry about him. He is an insane baseball talent.
And that's what I was going to say with him. Basically, any young slugger, right? You're worried about the strikeout numbers. In last season, among two different levels, yeah, he struck out 173 times in 129 games, but corrected that. And because of that, you can see his batting average has jumped, on base has jumped. But this is the kind of person that's just fun to have in fantasy, too. Just a guy that's powerful and going to hit some bombs for your fantasy squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially as he is learning what professional spin looks like, because it's hard. I mean, he had to learn to adjust to that. And man, the sky with him is absolutely insane. Like, the ceiling is going to be bonkers. And I honestly hadn't looked up his numbers prior to talking about him. I was planning to come in and make this comp to how he swings and misses like Ellie De La Cruz, and Ellie De La Cruz is still, you know, he's being productive for your fantasy teams right now. But he's not even swinging and missing like that this year, and that's what's insane. So I don't know if he's being more patient. Baseball America, in his write-up there, says that he made some adjustments in his stance and his swing. That could be helping. But, oh my gosh, if you're talking about a guy who has probably 70 raw power, and you're hoping that he can get to plus power, maybe even, you know, somewhere in between that 60-70 range in a game, and you're giving him an average hit tool, maybe,
mm-hmm,
along with some speed that's going to steal you bases, you're looking at a dude who's going to provide you double digits in home runs and steals. And he's probably going to do that the way he is right now, even if he was striking out 30% of the time. And you're adding to that the fact that he might not be striking out 30% of the time. I mean,
yeah, it's wild. I was like, where would you be happy with his batting average? Let's say he gets to the majors, like, provides everything else. He was hitting. What would you say you'd be happy with for an average?
400? No. I think, honestly, I am awful at answering those questions. I mean, I don't really, if I have James Wood, I don't care what his batting average is, as long as the home runs and the steal output in terms of fantasy is going to be useful. But if I had to throw a number out there, man, that's, I mean, honestly, I don't really care if he hits. He could hit 250 for all I care. Like, I care about the home runs. I care about the steals.
That's the number I had in my head.
Yeah,
like at the floor, if he could hit in the 250s, 250 even, but was doing everything else, you'd say, mm-hmm, yeah, that's good enough. Fantasy wise, that's good enough, right?
Yeah. So, it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens with James Wood. How long are they going to bring him down? I got to say, the Nationals went into rebuild mode, and they did it in maybe the most fun way possible, because they went out and when they traded everybody, or when they were drafting everybody, they traded for uber athletic, high variance players. And that is a very risky thing to do. Don't get me wrong, but you're talking about massive ceilings and then the floors. And when they traded Soto and you get that package back, you add CJ Abrams, you add James Wood, and you're seeing what the good variance there is. But you add them to an already existing Brady House, who, you know, who knows? And you add him to, or you add them to Elijah Green at that point, too, who's another super athletic guy who, you know, had the sky put on him before the draft.
Yep.
And I don't know if that's the best strategy. I mean, they also added what should have been a safer bet with Robert Hassel, and that hasn't quite worked out the way they thought it would. But man, I gotta say, I love what they tried to do there. I think that's a really fun way to do it, because if you have, let's say, those four, right, and you have the two of them that are going to work out this way, I would call that successful, because you have not just two good players or two contributors at your major league level, you have two potential cornerstones. And that doesn't even now count the fact that you have Dylan Cruz
is waiting there too, yeah,
who you just drafted and you're hoping, you know, is going to be a star for you. And a couple other guys, Yo-Yo Morales, they have to on a corner in the infield who has been getting some buzz. So even if you go 2-for-4 on the four guys I mentioned, and I think I'm probably forgetting somebody too, which is insane, but even if you go 2-for-4 on those guys, you have two potential cornerstones, and I kind of dig how they did that.
Well, it's fun from a fantasy perspective, because it's almost like playing a video game where you're building a roster. You know, you're trading for superstars or trading for really young, talented people. I think you said, right, when you draft fantasy redraft, you tend to go for the prospects, even when it's not dynasty, you still want those young, fun, exciting players. And so that's kind of what they did in real life. So yeah, they're not gonna all hit, but even a couple.
And again, it's the level that they're gonna hit that I think is the genius behind that risk you took. And it's calculated risk, right? Because these GMs have, and these teams, they have access to stuff we don't have access to. But they called a couple shots. They picked their spots. They got a couple guys, and obviously it worked out, right? You get CJ Abrams, you get James Wood, both coming in via a trade. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about having to replace Juan Soto. That's a good way to do that too. But just thinking, hey, you know what? If we can find a high variance guy that we believe in, if we can find a few of them that we believe in, even if they don't hit the way we think they're going to, if they can come close, man, that's going to work out for us. And we don't have a ton of time left, Nate, so I want to jump into another team that was, I guess, in a rebuild and didn't tell anybody it was over, because, and we've talked about this before with the Royals, Kansas City's, I mean, what are they doing? You thought that they were going in a direction where they're getting ready to rebuild and have a nice little time there, get some high draft picks, have some fun. And all of a sudden, you put this in the notes, their 39th win of the year came on the 9th, so on Sunday. And last year, their 39th win came in August. That's a pretty quick pickup there, yeah, on your rebuild. That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, so I saw that statistic today. I think I was reading a like an MLB power ranking, you know, article, and that just jumped off the page. Like, whoa, like that's crazy. Because last year maybe they ended up winning 60 games, or I don't even know, you know, what it was, but they're already, let's just call it 40 wins this year. It's a month to the All-Star break, and they're four games back in the AL Central. So if they keep this up, they'd be battling probably for a wild card. Not to say they couldn't even catch the Guardians, who are in first place. And it's because of the pitching is the big surprise.
Yeah. And even, I mean, they're down Michael Wacha at this point. They got Daniel Lynch filling in the rotation. And still, it's crazy. And I know this has nothing to do with the Royals, and I definitely made this comment before, but we all thought the White Sox were crazy going after all of the Royals guys, because they're basically the Chicago Royals front office at this point. Mm-hmm. Maybe they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of fun. I don't know. The Royals, kind of an underdog team. I've always liked the Royals. I just thought they had good, like, uniforms, just a solid cap and a solid blue color.
I like
that. So I don't know. It's random.
When they had the black sleeves, I don't know. I was a fan of those jerseys.
Yeah, that
was
really cool.
Yeah.
So I like when they do well. And so it's been kind of fun for Kansas.
I will say there are teams like this every year that play way above their head. We're not even to the All-Star break yet. We're not even to the trade deadline yet. I mean, things can fall apart. The wheels can come off quick.
Yes,
it can. We see teams do this all the time, but I don't know, man. That's a fun thing they got going on in Kansas City, and obviously doing it all with your franchise cornerstone, Bobby Witt Jr., who, oh my gosh, when he was in that phenomenal prospect class that had this. It was, I think, him and Adley and, you know, a couple other guys that were at the top, and people are trying to rank them all out. And I was adamant that Bobby Witt Jr., fantasy, real life, whatever, that he was like the top prospect in baseball, and you couldn't convince me otherwise. Whatever year that was, a few years ago. And I'll tell you what, man, he has done nothing but be phenomenal. And what a great pickup by the Royals.
Yeah, he's been awesome since he came in. I mean, you know, he's had his batting average has jumped every year. Now this season he's hitting .320. And the other night I saw he led the Royals back. I don't know if you saw this, but they overcame an 8-run deficit to win the game. Witt tied it. He had a triple in the ninth inning and then scored the winning run. And they won 10-9. But he's absolute stud fantasy player. Last year he was almost 30-50. He had 30 home runs, 49 stolen bases, 96 RBIs, and 11 triples.
Yeah, he's crazy. Here's some trivia for you. I'm gonna throw trivia back at you, Nate.
All right.
Bobby Witt Jr. drafted second overall in 2019. Who was the one player drafted ahead of him?
Oh, this is a good question. When was Adley Rutschman drafted?
In 2019. Yeah, you nailed it. Good job.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
That was the one guy. That draft class, so I just have it up right now. First overall was Adley. Bobby Witt Jr. went second. Andrew Vaughn went third.
Oh, Andrew Vaughn.
J.J. Bleda was drafted by the Marlins, fourth overall. Riley Green, whoo, he went fifth to the Tigers. That's the year the Padres got C.J. Abrams, sixth. Shea Langeliers went ninth in that draft, and he's already been traded, too. There's been a lot of guys who have moved teams just from this draft, and there's also been a lot of success from it. I mean, George Kirby was drafted 20th, Corbin Carroll 16th, Manoa 11th, Josh Young was drafted 8th. So that's been a solid group. Gunnar Henderson, second round that year. Can you imagine your team adding Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson in the first and second round of the same draft?
No, that's awesome.
And
we've, you know, talked about the Orioles quite a bit, but they have hit on so many of these players.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. They drafted hitters really, really well for a while. Matt Brash was drafted by the Padres in the fourth round that year. I'm going to keep scrolling down here and just finding more players. Hayden Wesneski by the Yankees in the sixth round that year. Blake Sabo was drafted by the Pirates in the seventh. DJ Hurz, who just made his debut with the Nationals, an eighth rounder that year. Anyway, there's more. Vinny P was an 11th rounder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good draft, but you got to spread out to go find it. So that's super interesting. Nate, I'm very happy I could be back with you today.
Yes, I'm glad you're back. Had some good conversation, and we covered a lot of territory, and it was fun.
Yeah, and of course, we will have another episode next week. I guess I most likely won't abandon Nate again and make him do it on his own. I guess we'll have to see and see what happens, and you'll just have to tune in again next week to find out. Either way, we appreciate you joining us here on Coffee Talk, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we are always ready for that next cup of coffee.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go! Go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43-9267-V1.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.